Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cast Dice, the podcast that explores the great big wild world of tabletop gaming that exists today. It's been said once or twice, mainly on this podcast, that we are in the middle of a gaming renaissance. There are just too many good games we can spend our hobby time and our hobby dollars on, and it can lead to a serious case of not knowing what to play next. And I guess that's the purpose of this podcast. It's to talk to my guests about the games that my guests and I enjoy playing, to talk about big industry events, and to talk to the people who create these games. I am very excited today to be talking about a tabletop adaptation of my all-time favorite video game. So excited. And if you've listened to this show at all over the years, you would know that I have mentioned Fallout a lot. And I am a huge fan of Fallout 4. I have played it tons. Yes, not only because I'm from Boston and I can find exactly on the map where I grew up, but also I fell in love with Fallout New Vegas and it changed the way I played video games. It changed the way I bought gaming systems. And I've been playing a ton of games since. Now, this is a tabletop game podcast, not a video game podcast. So it should be noted that I am very excited that we have a way to put my favorite video game on the tabletop. Now, I hear you in the background. I hear you. You are saying, but Brad, you had Chris from Modiphius on years ago to talk about Fallout Wasteland Warfare. And you are right. I did. And I have it. And it's great. But today, we have a very special guest who is on to talk about the new Fallout game, Fallout Factions Nuka World. And this is a man who has had his fingers in all kinds of gaming pies. I could name some of the games or a lot of the games he's done, but I would be here for a really long time. That said, we will get to a couple of the big ones that you will definitely know. One of the main men behind the most recent version of Necromunda, the big one in 2016, and the Hellboy game from Mantic, on top of all sorts of other Games Workshop games that I've really enjoyed picking up, some of the smaller specialist games. Joining us today is James Hewitt, the man behind Fallout Factions. How you doing, man?
Doing great, Brad. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. Now, I have been playing many of your games for many years. Before we even get to Fallout, how did you tiptoe into game design? Because you've been doing it for about 10 years now?
Yeah, about a decade now. I played career pinball, around the thing. I always knew, like, you know, when I was about 18, looking for a job, I was like, I really want to design games. Been playing games my whole life, various things. I was a huge Games Workshop fan from about age 8 or 9 onwards. And my first like proper job was in a Games Workshop store. And in my interview, I said, I would love to, you know, use this to one day get to design games for a living. And, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people say that in their interview for Games Workshop Retail, right? Mm-hmm. And what I'd love to say is that they followed a very, very straight line. You know, I was very driven and I did exactly the things that would be required to get into the industry. No, that's not what happened at all. I just really enjoyed working in the shops and helping people play games and learn things and kind of bringing them into this whole world. Because one of the big things in retail, I mean, you've got a sales background, you know, this is helping people like cross that barrier into what is wargaming. It's this whole weird hobby. Someone comes in off the street and you're like, hey, let me show you, you know, this amazing world. And I did that for about 10 years. And in that time made a whole load of contacts and friends. And eventually my old boss, messaged me and was like, hey, I'm working over at Mantic Games and they are looking for someone to design a sports game. Would you be interested? And so I put together a pitch, did a load of work and got in touch. And that's kind of through a whole bunch of, various happenstance, ended up with me working on Dreadball.
Oh, nice.
With Jake Thornton. Mm-hmm. And then that turned into a job at Mantic as a community manager because I'd gone out and been very excitable on the internet about Dreadball and, you know, during the Kickstarter and going on Board Game Geek and different mm-hmm. forums, answering questions. And Ronnie over at Mantic was like, hey, do you want to do that for a living? And yeah, I was at the time, at that point, I was working I'd left retail. I'd gone to work for the local council doing benefit assessment, which was just so exciting.
So fulfilling. That's riveting right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I got the offer and I did that. And then from there, about a year in Mantic, I applied to Games Workshop's studio, which I'd done previously a few times, but this time I had like industry experience. And, you know, I was still really excited and enthusiastic about making games. I think it just seemed to click. So that started it. And that was about 10 years ago. So, again, I'd love to say it was a really sort of a plan from the start. It was a dream, but I had no idea how to do it. And it just kind of happened. So I'm very lucky in that regard.
I was going to say, when you started out by saying that you were driven and you did everything in line to get to where you were, I was like, wow, you would be the first person on this show that ever did that. But I love it.
I mean, sarcasm. Yeah, I think when I worked in the Forge World studio, I think we had it was a paramedic, an oil rig worker, a chocolatier, like all these various, you know, no one seems to have a straight way into this industry. It's like you end up doing five different jobs and then I design games. And that's the route people take.
Well, as we found out in one of the most recent chats we had with our good friend Rick Priestley, we found out that Jervis Johnson is a trained mortician. I mean, right? One of the greatest individuals. Yeah, one of the greatest game designers of our time.
I sat next to him for several years and never knew that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know either until Rick, you know, was dropping hot bombs.
And I can absolutely. Yeah, I can see he's got the poise. He's got the gravitas. Mm-hmm. I can see that working.
Wow. And he's got the voice. Oh my God.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe before that job, he sounded like really chipper and, you know, who can say?
Exactly.
I'll have to
drop
the line and find out.
All right. Well, let's jump from Games Workshop to Modiphius.
Yeah.
Now, Modiphius has had the Fallout contract for quite a while. And we are on, correct me if I'm wrong here, wave 9 of miniatures for Fallout Wasteland Warfare or just Fallout gaming in general?
Yeah, I think wave 10 has just been announced, I think. Okay. Or is that wave 9? I've lost track. Some waves have happened.
For those who aren't familiar, Wasteland Warfare is a wonderful sandbox game, is how I've heard it described. It really is an engine that allows you to play out Fallout adventures on the tabletop, obviously like no other game, but it has one of the best AI mechanics to have the monsters and the NPCs run around the tabletop, better than any other game I've read. It has wonderful, deep mechanics on character creation and all of the gear and how it interacts with your character and how you find it when you loot things. It is almost a role-playing game. It is so good and it is so deep, but it also is so deep and it can be a little intimidating. I know that when I opened the box, I went, what the hell is this giant pile of weird dice? And all of the counters known to humankind. Yeah. It is very intimidating. However, I always kind of wanted a lighter version of that, that I could throw down on the tabletop with some friends and have a good time.
Yeah.
And what you have done is created that in this new game, Fallout Factions. Now, the first expansion / box set for that is Nuka World, which of course ties into one of the DLCs for Fallout 4, where they go to a Disneyland-esque area, Nuka World, that's been overrun with the punks and scavs, the raiders, as they're called. And you have created a universe where you're not actually playing one hero with one friend following you around. Instead of companions, you're actually just running one of those crews of awful miscreants, and you're trying to take over. You're part of Nuka World. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you weren't alone in wanting that, you know, that slightly more accessible experience, right, with than Wasteland Warfare, because Wasteland Warfare, as you say, is a very rich, very deep, very rewarding game to play once you've crossed that barrier to entry. In a lot of ways, it's like Blood Bowl, which, you know, that's a game I've worked on that for a bit. And when you get people who get it and have taken the time to get past that really punishing learning curve, they are like fans for life. They love that game to bits. And I think the same is true of a game like Wasteland Warfare. But yeah, the question is, how do you get a new person to play it? How do you bring your friends in? How do you grow your gaming group? And you kind of have to go, right, okay, so this is going to hurt and you're going to not have great fun for the first couple of games, but then you're going to really enjoy it. And that's a hard sell. So with factions, it was kind of all about how do we make a game that is accessible for people who are like fans of the video games, maybe, but aren't necessarily fans of wargaming in general. Mm-hmm. And so, Nuka World was such a great setting for it. Because I mean, the John from Odysseus came to me, and I've known John for years. John also is X Games Workshop Retail. We worked together many, many years ago. John Webb, this is. And he told me, look, we're planning this. We're doing a wave of Nuka World miniatures. There's three raider gangs. We're doing plastics for them. This is the ideal jumping on point for a gang based skirmish game.
Mm-hmm.
And the briefing really was, we want a game that will stand alongside Wasteland Warfare. We're not like Wasteland Warfare is still here. It's still supported. We're not getting rid of it. That's the game for the deep, granular, rewarding, but hard to get into kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Factions is the quick competitive game. It's very easy to learn. It's got a lot of depth to it, but it's very straightforward, you know, for people that want to come in and just play a bunch of quick games with some friends. And so that distinction was really key in the early design process. And as I say, Nuka World was such a fantastic setting because you've got a self-contained area with a bunch of gangs vying for supremacy. It writes itself, you know?
Yeah. And those gangs have such crazy and creative character, right? Each one of them, we have, of course, we have the Disciples, the Pack, the Operators. Each one has its own look. Each one has its own quirks. Each one has its own weapons. So this really is an excellent opportunity to have some flavor on the tabletop and, you know, marry it up with a cool campaign system, which we will get to in a minute. But so cool. And it also sets itself up really nicely for some, you know, terrain that you can put in a box set, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the card terrain that you get in the box is really cool. It was a thing that kind of, it came quite late in the process. We knew we wanted to have something in there, and there was a lot of like going back and forth between the different people in different parts of the team, you know, or could we put plastic terrain? Could we put PVC terrain? What can we do and make it like give you enough to actually play a game with? Maybe not all your games, but if your first few games gives you enough for that. But mm-hmm. how do you do that without making it a really unaffordable box? And right. Lee, who's one of the graphic designers, again, X Games Workshop, he did an amazing job with the terrain, like, you know, precisely cutting it. It's thick punch board card, mm-hmm. and it slots together. You can glue it. Certainly you want to glue some of the smaller pieces, but the buildings, they fold flat. It's incredible. It's a really nice setup. It places you right in like Dry Rock Gulch.
Mm-hmm.
The terrain is nice enough that I would say even once you start adding to it, you're going to want to still have these things on your table.
Oh yeah.
And it's just a really nice jumping off point. And it means that we're including everything you need to play. The only thing that isn't in there is like paints, glue, and that kind of thing. But that's always an extra, right? Other than that, you can open this box and start playing without having to go and, you know, buy a load of scenery and stuff, which is, yeah, ideal.
Now, you are talking about this game being easier and easily accessible for non-gamers and for gamers. And I do absolutely want to get into game mechanics in a minute because I want to talk luck, activations, weapon upgrades, the whole thing. And we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Trust me, folks, we're going to get there. But first, I want to point out, though, that while we're talking about the box set, you mentioned that you get two, well, maybe you didn't, but you did mention there are two hard plastic on the sprue gangs in the box set. Now, what I love about these, not only are they beautiful plastic with lots of detail, the options are really impressive for this because you get, so, you know, base bodies for 10 models, but what you then get are 2 to 3 sets of weapons and upgrades and additional bits and pieces that you can put on those models to individualize them and to line up with how you are configuring your gang in the game. Now, model wise, because if you do want to see how gangs are put together and bought, spoilers, I might let something out of the bag here. If you go to the Modiphius website and you look at the assembly guide for these models, which I did, the rules for gang creation are actually at the back of that document.
They are
with
indeed.
All of the options.
Yep, absolutely.
So there are, not only do you get multiple options per model and all those additional bits, but each of those weapon loadouts has a different cost and has a different profile for the gang, which, and the game, which really, man, it just, looking at the weapon loadouts, it just gave me such Fallout nostalgia vibes slash love. It was amazing. Can you talk about that process?
Yeah, sure. We had a kind of an interesting job there because so when I joined the project, there'd already been like some sculpting work done on most of the miniatures. I was able to kind of give a bit of feedback on weapons and things. And one of the first jobs was figuring out what the different types of weapons would be. So, for example, in Nuka World, in the DLC, the handmade rifle comes in a big way, right? Because, and I think it was kind of an answer to the fact that there wasn't really an assault rifle type gun in Fallout 4. Even though there was the assault rifle, which was not an assault rifle. The fans kind of wanted a, you know, tactical assault rifle type gun. So the handmade rifle came in. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things, as with everything in Fallout 4, it's very customizable. You've got all different ways of building all your different guns. With factions, we wanted to have an element of modding weapons, but also we didn't want to go crazy with it because, again, we want the game to be accessible and quick and easy. So what we had to do was think, right, what are the like four or five iconic versions of the handmade rifle? So we ended up with, you've got the handmade rifle, which is your kind of base build. There's the, I think it's called the light handmade rifle, which is a shortened cut down version of the bayonet. You've got the automatic handmade rifle, which the pack have, which is a big, heavy box mag kind of thing. And the marksman's handmade rifle, which is your sniper variant. And so we kind of decided, and I've got a save of Fallout 4 with me, stood at a weapons workbench with, you know, cheats activated and all the materials. So I can just go in and look at, how can a laser rifle be modded? What are the different ways that can be? And which ones look distinct enough that they'll be visually, you know, identifiable on a miniature, and also the rules can be different enough. And then once you're playing, you can start tweaking. We'll go into all that stuff later, but the point is that there are these iconic versions. Like hunting rifle's a great one. We've got a short hunting rifle, the regular one, the scout hunting rifle, which is like it's got a sickle mag and a bayonet. It's a little bit more fire on the move. And then the precision hunting rifle, which again is like your sniper variant. So we've given these things there, and that was a really interesting, like, first step, was thinking, here's a bunch of ways people can, you know, arm their models. And what I think is great is you get so much on those sprues. Colin Grayson, who sculpted them. They're incredible. Colin's got years of experience with plastics, again, with Games Workshop. And he makes some of the best sprues out there, and he has just packed it with all different things. And what's, I think, is great is some of those options on there, they're only for Wasteland Warfare, because the weapons, the sprues are doing double duty for both games. So, for example, the Disciples have a plasma rifle on there, which you can't use in factions, but you can use it in Wasteland Warfare. Who knows, down the line, maybe they will. So it kind of means that these packs are not just about the models you get. As you say, you get 10 models, but you get so much more to it than that. Someone actually asked me a few days ago, someone who's going to be doing some demos at Adepticon for us, said, if a customer asks me, like, is there like a weapon pack or anything for the different things? If I wanted to convert my own operators set, is there a weapon pack coming out that I could use? And I was like, well, yeah, there is. It comes with 10 models as well, but it is also an amazing weapons pack conversion kit. There's so much stuff on there. So you really can make your gang your own. But yeah, as you said, in the assembly guides, you can see how we've done it with the different models. So whereas Wasteland Warfare is very, very open and you can pick whatever you want, with this, it's like, no. An operator's psycho has these four options, and that let us keep it nice and approachable for new players. You know, you come in, you just have a few options to pick from, off you go, which I think it's really helpful. Actually, I've just started playing a Necromunda campaign, having, you know, not played it since it came out, and I missed that because I was thinking of how to equip my gang, and I was looking at my, the Vansar book, and I was like, there's so many options here. I have no idea where to begin. So I ended up going and reading lots of articles online. So I think and that's me as 30 odd years of games experience.
Yeah.
I feel for any new person coming in who's trying to figure it out for the first time. So with factions, the whole idea was, hey, here's an easier way. And we've got like some pre-generated starter gangs and that will be up on the website that people can pick. So it's all about making it easy for people.
Yeah, it is very cool. And as you were talking about standing at the workbench, looking at all the guns and the different options, as someone who's played an embarrassing amount of Fallout 4, I have spent hours looking at that workbench, just trying to figure out what to give my character to go out and look for some fans, for desk fans.
It's always desk fans. It's always desk fans. Yep.
It is always desk fans.
Like, you can tell that someone has played a lot of Fallout 4 because that desk fans make sense to them. And they understand the pain of going to a settlement and having to dig more wells and plant more carrots. Because they can't do it themselves. They have no clue. I mean, look at the place. They never sweep up. The buildings are full of holes. You can build things, guys. Yeah. Come on.
I actually, my big secret to that is, for the first couple of times I played Fallout 4, I actually ignored the settlement mechanic entirely and just explored. And then I was like, oh, I should probably do something. So I just built up Sanctuary Hills? Yeah. I built that up, and then I built up the fort so I could have the artillery. And that was it.
Yep.
And the rest of the Commonwealth?
It's a slippery slope, and they need to look after themselves.
Exactly.
That's all I'm going to say.
As a primary school teacher, it's giving them the chance where they can shine themselves. Anyway, on that note, the weapon systems for this, I do want to touch on something you mentioned because I think it's really important. And you brought up the Necromunda comparison, so I'm going to go with that. I played the hell out of original Necromunda, and tearing models apart to rearm them was the bane of my existence, and yet one of my favorite things at the time as a kid. Now as an adult, the idea of taking apart a model that I've spent that much time painting, because I'm an extremely slow painter, just to break it and rebuild it, but give it a different gun, that gives me shivers, sweats, and I will stay up at night thinking about that. This game follows the newer Necromunda model, if I can draw the comparison, in that once you've armed a model and you've bought a set of gear for that model, it stays with that. But going back to what I was saying a second ago about the weapon bench, just like in Fallout 4 and other Fallout variants, the way that you upgrade the character, like, yes, characters do upgrade over time as part of campaigns, but their weapons can be upgraded as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can see, any game designer, you can see their trauma in their work, right? And I'm exactly the same. So many like Necromunda campaigns where I'd be like, okay, I've got a plasma gun. Oh, it's really good, but no, I don't want to, because I'm now going to cut the las gun off and stick a plasma gun. And of course, what you end up with is, here's my painted model with a bare plastic plasma gun or whatever it might be, you know. And I'll get around to painting it eventually, honest. And so, yeah, a lot of like the Necromunda system, which was like you arm them once, that's it. With your champions, you can have different like weapon loadouts for them for the same character, which I think was quite a nice way of doing it. Mm-hmm. But the idea was, once you've built a model, that's it. That is the model as it is. Let's not kid ourselves. Let's make it nice and easy, right? And so, yeah, with factions, the weapon modding system it's a little kind of, it's a way of having it both ways. You know, you can, okay, my character is going to start off with a short hunting rifle, which is probably one of the worst weapons in the game. It's very cheap though. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit naff, but with a few mods, suddenly it's looking really nice. And, but because, you know, the model is this, you know, the weapon is this big on the model, we don't worry about having to convert it to add things. All it is you're just kind of saying, hey, on the model's profile, which you record on your lovely landscape piece of A4 paper that we have, you know, you write, now it's got this additional thing. It has one more die. It has a slightly longer range, whatever it might be. So you're just upgrading weapon stats over time. So the visually, the model is the same. The stats get better. And again, like every weapon in the game, we do like a little mod chart, which gives you 2 to 4 options for modding it and upgrading it. And it's very abstract. We don't say exactly what the mod is that you're making. We just say, here's the upgrade that you're taking. And it's a nice, streamlined, simple way of doing it. And it gives you a lot of power as a player to think about how you want to develop your gang. And, you know, do you want to push more into your specialty? Do you want to broaden the things available to you? You know, and I'm really happy with how it's turned out.
Yeah. The nuance to it seems really nice, and I'm really excited to put it on the tabletop beyond the quick start rules and to see how that plays out, because I've heard you talk about the weapon upgrade system, but of course the quick start rules don't have that bit. So I'm looking forward to giving that one a good read. Well, let's go backward through this, so to speak. If we're talking about upgrading characters and upgrading gangs and upgrading weapons, clearly that is upgrading over a campaign. Now, of course, this game is designed to be played both fun and competitively. It's balanced for both. Because I know people love to say, is it narrative or is it competitive? Why not both?
Yeah.
Because if something is balanced for competitive, it is easier to play a narrative fun game with it, because you know it's fair for everyone. And yes, of course, you can play this game that way, but you can also play it through a campaign. Now, I love how you have designed the campaign system for this game, because it feels a lot like a map-based system, because of course you're battling over Nuka World, and each section of Nuka World, just like Disneyland, Tomorrow World, has its own little set of nuanced rules. And as you take up portions of that control for your gang, it gives you different benefits. But at the same point, you're not actually stuck into that same old campaign system with the same five people who sometimes can't play, sometimes play too much. And, you know, this is not a map-based system, but it feels in the best way it is, because everyone is working on their own sort of individual campaign, and then that's how they link together. Am I getting that? Am I summing that up all right?
Absolutely. It is. Yeah, it's a game that gives you the feel of a map-based campaign without having to have a map. And again, this, you know, it's trauma, right? You know, running so many campaigns where, one player gets a new job and has to move away. One player really wants to, but is so busy and can't schedule a game. Two players see each other every night, and they're going to scoot ahead from everyone else. And, you know, and then who wants to play against them? And also, I mean, you know, 10 years running campaigns in shops, you know, knowing that people will turn up when they want to, and everyone really is on their own journey. And that was the key driving thing with factions, is your crew is on their own journey. So all of the campaign stuff is based entirely around your own force. So you have your roster sheet on the back of it. You have the story side where you track your own quest, and you have like achievements you're trying to unlock as you go through in order to work through the three tiers of gameplay. Each tier giving you more options, you know, opening up your gang a little bit. But the intention was you're only worried about your own progress. You're not kind of having to stay with the same group and worry about this whole group thing. You know, control in an area is measured with a number. And when like you and I come to play a game, we just compare our control. Oh, we're in Kitty Kingdom. I've got 3, you've got 4. That means you get some advantages because you've got more control. And so you get that vibe. But it means that I could, for example, like next week I'm going to Adepticon for the first time, big convention in the US. I've never been.
Enjoy.
It's going to be fun. I'm going to be, I think they're chaining me to the factions table to just run demos for everyone. So I'm looking forward to that. But so I could go there and I could take my crew that I've been playing in the office campaign and take it over there and play against some people. And I would count, you know, various things for my crew. They'd count things for theirs. We do a few roles afterwards for the story phase. And then we go our separate ways, never see each other again. But we've had like a little impact on each other's crews. Or I can have a little gaming group at home and play them every week. And that also works. So it's, again, it's flexibility, it's accessibility, and it's based on years of running campaigns that have gone, you know, varying degrees of well.
Yeah, exactly, right? But it also, something I've heard you mention before, not only does it have impact as far as, you know, what's happening by comparing those numbers, maybe within your gangs, but then it also relates to the missions in this game, right?
Yeah, so basically what it happens is when you come to pick the mission you're going to play, there's a few different things that kind of come into it. So first of all, you decide whereabouts you're going to be playing. So like you've got 5 locations around Nuka World where the game can take place. You then, and of course, people will have varying levels of control in that location. So there's a roll off to decide who chooses the location, and hopefully you get to the one that's going to give you the best advantage. And then you pick your scenario, and again, having more control gives you, or control also scouting points, which I think you can get during downtime. You can go and scout out an area, gives you advantages based on, you know, who's got the most of that. And each scenario is very different and gives you a different outcome. So the choice of scenario is really important. So, for example, if you want, there's another player and you want to kind of steal some of their control. They've got a lot of control in an area. You want to take some of their control. There's a land grab scenario. You can kind of go in and steal stuff from them. If you're running low on you know, your stockpile's running low, you haven't got many caps, many parts, you maybe want to get your hands on some cool things, you can do a retrieval run or a stockpile raid, which are both things where you go in, it's like an attacker, defender, and you're trying to steal stuff. But what it means is that the choice of scenario is a really key, like, strategic part of gameplay. There is the basic skirmish, which is the straightforward, you know, fight over some objectives, is always good fun, and there's a lot of depth to it, but there are other scenarios that have really key purposes.
That's cool. I love that, because a lot of skirmish games, the missions can be a little samey at times, and this feels like there's a real nuance and difference so that the players really do get a varied experience on the tabletop.
100%. I mean, I think one of the things that we really wanted to do with this was, and I like to do this with games, but when I'm working on a game, I always start at the very core of the engine. I think, like, what does a round of play look like? You know, two players across the table, what is it you're doing? And what is the most basic version of that gameplay? Like, for example, when I did Titanicus for Games Workshop, it was like, what does one Titan versus one Titan look like? And the intention is to make that engaging and fun, and maybe not as broad as it will be eventually, but that is engaging and fun. And so with this, I think, even though we've got all these different scenarios and different things, the core gameplay, the action economy, the, even if I haven't got special rules, perks, just, you know, five models aside, that is still an engaging game because the core engine gives a lot of interesting decision points for players. Even though it's easy to get into, there's a lot of depth to it. Yeah. And
there you go.
So then the scenarios build on that and go, right, the core puzzle of the game is really interesting. So how do we now stretch that and give players different experiences, different ways to experience it?
Regular listeners of the show will absolutely know that that is my favorite thing in the world. A game that's easy to pick up and then has the nuanced depth that keeps you playing. And this game has it in spades. Let's talk about some of the mechanics that are in here that really do make this game unique. One of my favorite is the activation system because it is a you go, I go system in that you activate a model, I activate a model. But unlike a lot of other games, you can split the activations for your model. So, for example, if my model, I activate one of my raiders, he has two activations. I can choose to move up to a particular point and then stop him and then use his other activation later in the turn. So you really do have a lot more choice about how you are moving things around on the tabletop. You can also activate models in groups to have different board control to different parts. It means that your opponent will have more activations later, which isn't, you know, again, a tactical choice. But also at a certain point, you can just say, actually, you know what? I'm done for the turn. Yeah. And that gives you an advantage towards activating first the next turn. So there are tons of decisions that you have to make on the tabletop. And as we like to say on this podcast, you know, there's a lot of bad decisions you can make, which means a lot of fun. So
hubris is the best game design. You know, if you can get players to regret what they've done, that's fantastic. That's all I want to do in life.
Oh, man, that is my middle name. regretting my moves on the tabletop in recent years. But this game gives you so many options for activating models on the tabletop. Am I summing this up? Are there other nuances I'm missing in there?
No, I think you're really getting it really well. I think the thing to me is it's a system which gives players a lot of choices. As you say, you can group your actions together and use a lot of actions at once, or you can just be quite sparing, just use one and let the opponent react. And that does a couple of things. The first thing it does is it means the game plays really well with, like, imbalance in model count. Because we knew for a fact, I mean, even though the first three sets are all raiders, it's Fallout, we're going to have power armor, we're going to have super mutants, who knows what else we're going to have. We wanted to make sure that, and even, like, you know, settlers and complete nobodies who are going to be ultra cheap, you know, chaff style factions, we wanted to make sure that the imbalance in model count would work. And that's what this does really well. Because, so say, for example, I want to make an open fire action, I want to shoot at the opposing side. I could pick one model, use one action in my activation. So the action economy is I'm using one action per turn. And if I've got a decent, so like, you know, Brotherhood of Steel, for example, I probably only need one activation to do something good.
Right.
If I'm playing a bunch of, you know, low down dirty raiders, like the Wasteland Raiders thing that's on the Get You By lists that have come out, they are like the real lowest of the low. They might activate four or five at once to give bonus dice and, you know, really take it out against that one Brotherhood of Steel character. And so it means the game balances out. The other thing that it does, and this was really key, when we introduced this into testing during development, this made such a difference. With games where it is activate, you know, a model at a time and do things, what you can get into is everyone does their interesting stuff at the start. And the back end of the round is, I suppose I'll move over there. I'll do that. You know, and it's just kind of, no one really cares. Right. Yeah. And so you end up doing this kind of this little dance back and forth. With this, we start going, right, how do we get rid of that? And one of the things was, as you said, the pass mechanic, where you can go, right, I'm done for the turn. I'm going first next turn. That initiative token is mine. Thank you very much. But also the fact that you can combine those actions in, it means your absolute nobodies, rather than having to waste an action at the end of the turn, well, they can actually spend actions to support your other characters. And so it all just condenses the game in. The game plays in about half an hour once you know what you're doing. I've had games that are less than that. And everything that happens matters. The fact that the play size is quite small, it's on a 2x3 board, it's you cut straight to the action. I played some Frostgrave recently, which is a very Mordheim-y skirmish game in a ruined city. Me and a friend played it, and all I kept thinking was, we've set up this lovely 4-foot by 4-foot table. We did a whole ruined thing. The edges didn't matter. Everything happened in the middle. All that happened around the edges was, oh, this guy's running away with a treasure chest. He's going to be doing that for a couple of turns. There's someone over there who's just about over there. There's a sniper in the corner, but they're kind of out of range of most stuff. Condense your tables. I love it when games have a small playing area. I think it really just condenses it. It's like boiling down a nice soup.
You know? Yeah, exactly, right?
A rich and creamy experience is what we're going for.
Well, you're cutting out the chaff, right? You're just... And it means that, as you say, you're getting right into the short, sharp bit of the game, because you don't have to, you know, do those first couple of turns of maneuvering to get into position. You're already there.
We're all busy people, right? There's so many games out there. If you give me a game that I can play a couple of times in a night rather than having to slog through a 3-hour game, that's where I'm going. I mean, Blood Bowl is a great example. The number of times I've played a Blood Bowl game, and by half an hour in, I'm like, yeah, I've lost this. But I'm still playing for the next hour and a half to 2 hours, you know. When I did Blitz Bowl, which was it was the first thing I did outside Games Workshop. It was a freelance gig. And it went into very specific places like Barnes & Noble in the US, I think a couple of stores in Canada, some stores in Germany. That was like the same thing, trying to boil down the Blood Bowl experience to something that you can play in half an hour. And And I think I love that kind of game. I want games that I can play. I've got a kid, you know, I've got a job. I need to play games that are quick.
I could not agree more. You are preaching to the choir. Well, one of my absolute favorite bits about Fallout, of course, is, as a Fallout fanboy, is the special set of stats. And you've worked that in as far as how models, it's the statistics in this game for what models can do, how fast they are, what, you know, their perception, et cetera, et cetera. But as part of that, you have a really cool mechanic for L, which is, of course, luck. And luck is one of those ephemeral characteristics in Fallout that the machine takes into account when you are playing the video game, and all sorts of wacky stuff can happen, from crits to, you know, things. You see it all in that game. But that is tied into the tabletop game in a really interesting way. Now, you can lose some of those depending on if you're firing from too far away or if someone's in cover or disadvantaged in some way. But when the luck mechanics in play in this game, you really can liquefy someone with a plasma gun, for example.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, when we looked at like luck, we had to put special in. Special was a no-brainer from the word go. We need to put in. Ideally, honestly, it was a thing where it's like, well, if a player is coming in new, it probably would be better to just call this one shoot and this one fight and this one whatever. But it wouldn't be Fallout otherwise, right?
Right.
So that's a concession we had to make. because Special is so iconic. Do you know it was originally called Ace Lips? Did you know this? The working acronym was A-C-E-L-I-P-S. And then someone went, you know, you could rearrange that to Special. And I think we're all glad they did.
Yeah, they are.
Who wants Ace Lips, right? But yeah, so luck in the video.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Fun fact, you see. Look it up. It's true. So in the video game, I'd say luck permeates everything, right? You know, every time you open a container to see what's inside it, every time you make a shot, all these different things, the computer is kind of reading what's your luck score and, you know, what are the chances of this thing happening. And that would be a little bit heavy-handed for a mm-hmm. game like this. So instead, we made sure it incorporates into every dice roll, as I say, with a few exceptions. So what you're doing is you're building a dice pool. And by default, let's say I'm firing a handmade rifle. It's a perception 4 weapon. So I'm rolling 4 dice and checking against my perception. Let's say I've got perception of 5. So every dice that scores a 5 or less is a hit. Lovely. But with luck, I might have a luck rating of 2. So I switch out 2 of those dice for luck dice. And then those mm-hmm. dice explode. So if they hit, you roll another dice in. It's not like an endless explode. Like you can't explode into another explosion because you just roll a standard dice in. So it's limited and capped, so it doesn't get too silly, but the option is always there for that interesting thing. There's a thing in game design theory about different types of randomness and predictability, and one of the, like, you've got a white noise, which is you can't really predict what it's going to be mm-hmm. from time to time. Brown noises, it's quite predictable because it's quite a small range of different things, like flipping a coin, for example. Pink noise is the ideal one, which is there's a large chance of something predictable and a small chance of something wild. Mm-hmm. And it's like your 2d6, when you make a 2d6 dice roll, there's that bell curve, right? You're expecting a 6 to 8, but a 2 mm-hmm. or a 12 can happen, and it's really cool. And that's what the exploding dice and the luck system does, is it gives you that little chance to go, maybe I can get this, even though I know I technically probably can't injure that super mutant. There's a chance I can, so I'm going to give it a go. And for me, though, in games, I always take those chances, right? Because if it works, it's an awesome moment.
But it's also a way to activate those keywords, right? Not only do you get like the tough fighter mechanic for bolt action, the more you hit, the more chances you get to roll more dice to hit again. Yep. But with this, when the luck dice kick off, each weapon has its own keyword. And those keywords are activated with the luck score, if I'm understanding it right.
Absolutely. So yeah, basically, if you get at least one of those luck dice exploding, and I mean, we went through a whole load of different things in development and testing. At one point we had you roll a separate luck dice. Other times we had you checked your luck stat and your perception stat, for example, which is kind of borrowed from 2d20, which is Modiphius's RPG system. Mm-hmm. So we'd say, oh, I need fives. My luck is 2. So fives will hit, but ones and twos will crit. Mm-hmm. But we ended up kind of with a thing. This was the simplest way of doing it, which is you roll the luck dice within the roll. And mm-hmm. if one of them pops off, then yeah, you get your critical trait, or critical effect, sorry, triggering, which critical effect is a way of making the different guns feel like they are in the video game without having to have loads of complicated stats. So again, we wanted to boil the game down to its barest minimums. So a weapon has its test, which is the number of dice and what you're rolling against, your effective range. Generally you can fire outside that range, as you said earlier, it's unlucky, you don't get the luck dice. Mm-hmm. And any traits or critical effects. And that's all there is to it. So you're not worrying about, like, you know, different range bands or different modifiers. It's very straightforward. And so the critical effects, there are like 6 of them in the game. There may mm-hmm. be more in future, but they are a special thing that makes this weapon feel like it is. So for example, handmade rifles generally have suppress X, which mm-hmm. is after if you've triggered it, there's a chance that you will knock or you'll give fatigue to the target, which means they get one less action to make in the turn. Mm-hmm. Things like the 44 pistol, I think it's got pierce, which knocks the target's endurance down, so you're more likely to injure them. You've got some weapons do maim, which does additional harm to the target. You've got all these different things, and so you get the feeling, oh, this is a precision sniper weapon, this is a rapid firing suppressive weapon, this is just a nasty weapon, you know. And it's a really simple way of doing it. I won't lie, I mean, I stole it mercilessly from myself. I did Horus Heresy Betrayal at Kalth, which was the
great game. Great game.
And mm-hmm. that has a similar activation system, in that you do one action, that was, you had to do one action at a time but you go back and forth between units. But also the critical system, which was you just roll a number of dice, and the critical is where the flavor of the gun comes in. And so, yeah, I think this is the distilled version of that idea, and it makes things really interesting. So, for example, one of my favorite like interactions to teach what this concept is if I've got my operator's made man with a marksman's handmade rifle, which is a deadly weapon in the right hands, that's got the test is two dice on perception, not great, but it's got aim plus three, which means if you spend an extra action to shoot, not just one but two, you add three dice. You're making five dice now. Suddenly that's really scary, especially if the target's out in the open. You know, maybe you've got some supporting fire, you can do some really scary things. If I've got, you know, I'm playing the pack, I open up with my automatic handmade rifle, I can hopefully fatigue your character up there. They lose the extra action, so they can no longer aim, so they're now less effective. And this is the, again, it's all part of the strategy and the tactics of gameplay, is how you use your critical effects. And actually just building your crew, making sure you have a mixture of interesting critical effects is really fun. I mean, one of the things we've done is we've put a lot of plans in place. This game's getting supported, you know, big time. We're putting a lot of different rules out. And one of the really interesting things, I've got a big spreadsheet of all the weapons that are likely to be turning up in the game. And I love a spreadsheet, right? And one of the things was looking at, like, okay, so how do we make sure that a faction that comes out has a good balance of critical effects that are true to the video game, but also, you know, make sense in this? And for some of them, and I'm not going to mention any names, some of them that is very challenging, but we think we've got that. Watch this space.
Watch this space. It's coming. Now, I do love that you are talking. You did mention a few minutes ago that when this game's initial release, if you look at the box, you look at the logo, it says Fallout Factions. And then underneath is a nice little scroll that says Nuka World.
Seems very, so, very removable, doesn't it? Like, you could just wipe that away and make something else be there, maybe.
Exactly. So as you said, there are three gangs for this upon release. Yep. But we're already seeing expansions beyond Nuka World. Now, I have played a crud load of Fallout. I've never played Nuka World. So I did not necessarily have a huge nostalgic jump for that particular part of the park or a game, for example, because I haven't played that DLC. However, with the Fallout TV show coming in April, this game will be releasing around that ballpark area. We have seen through the Modiphius site that they're already doing a pack of characters from that TV show. And correct me if I'm wrong, there's going to be stats for Fallout Factions for those models.
Yes, indeed. They are, they're coming out with a set of rules. I think Lone Wanderers was the term we ended up using for it, which is characters you can add to your crew for the purposes of a game. And, you know, it's one of those things where you and your opponent have to agree to it, because if you're someone who cares an awful lot about the canon of things here, you know, the Fallout TV show happens at a slightly different point to Nuka World, about 12 years after Nuka World. It's in a different part of the world. But if you just want to get some cool models on the table and play some games, we're giving you the option. You know, I'm a big believer in giving players tools to do things and letting them draw their own lines. If they say, no, we want to do this, you know, pure, we don't care about characters that are in LA, we're based in, you know, Nuka World, that's fine. But those that just want to have some fun on the table, they can do. And the three characters, they've got some really fun rules based on, like, you know, what we've seen of the TV show, which is looking spectacular.
Right.
So did you see the new trailer that came out? It really,
You know, I have. Yeah.
Oh yes. Yeah. You can see the bloody mess perk is in full effect, I think.
Yes.
And funnily enough, in the factions rules, the ghoul, Walton Goggins' character, he has bloody mess because he definitely has that perk.
Oh, yes, he does. I have very high hopes, and I am more than a little scared about that TV show. I'm hoping it is as good as it looks.
I'm confident. I think it looks really good.
Yeah. Well, as someone who absolutely adored New Vegas, you see the NCR in that, and that's just,
right.
So good.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about how this game, as we're talking about expanding it out, and I realize you are limited. You can't go into too far into the future, But if I can, we have mentioned earlier that the 10th wave of miniatures for this game is coming out. There are tons of different, I mean, literally online pages of different STL option packs that you can get if you have a 3D printer, if you want to populate your tabletop for this with all sorts of Fallout specific terrain and gubbins on the tabletop that you can put in and play around. Not to mention, I hadn't looked, I'll admit, I hadn't looked in about a year at how many models were out for this game. And wow, it has jumped considerably. And I knew a lot of the stuff. I knew they had done New Vegas, and I was very excited about that. But there are so many different models that you can put on the tabletop for Wasteland Warfare, and they are all the same scale. They are all the same sculpting design ethos for this game. So there has to be a way to bring that myriad of models, that universe of Fallout, onto a tabletop. I'm hoping going into the future, given the unbelievable depth of the range of models, that players could put on the tabletop to have a good time.
I think we'd be crazy to not give people the chance, right, to bring all those things to the table. I mean, already we've put out what we're calling get you buy lists for four of the factions. Had you not noticed this?
No, I did not notice this. Ooh. Where are these?
On the same place, same place the assembly guides are on the website. So you can download rules for using, here we go, Brotherhood of Steel.
Nice.
Super Mutants. Wasteland Raiders, who are basically raiders, generic raiders with a leader with power armor. So we've got power armor out there as well for them. And a group we're calling Wasteland Settlers, who are like your generic survivor settler types. There you go. And yeah, see. But there's a whole, so we've got, what we've got there is a get you by set of rules. Now, the reason we call it a get you by is it's not laid out nicely. It's kind of very scrappy, but we saw the number of people who were like yourself, big fan of Fallout, not necessarily familiar with Nuka World, not too excited about playing with Raiders. What else is out there? And so we're like, hey, let's release something that we haven't finished yet, and people can look at it, try it out, give, you know, have some interesting ideas. What have you got there? That's exactly.
Brotherhood of Steel. I was like,
I mean, why would you not?
I did buy those, right? Oh yeah, I did. Yeah. They're literally next to me, well, kids.
You can download the rules and you can start playing some games with them, you know. And so this is the first wave of online support we're doing. We've got a lot of plans. I mean, we've been looking at what are all the different ways you could fit the various Wasteland Warfare miniatures onto your table. Now, some of it is more difficult than others. So for example, but this being a story like campaign based game, all about like your crew trying to get ahead in the world, it might be weird to have like a Maya Lurk faction, for example. But that's not to say we won't find ways to put them in. I mean, one thing we've been discussing is competitive play. Like if people want to go, we want to play a game, you know, we want to set up a tournament over a weekend. We want to play a bunch of games equally matched. How do we do that? And so we're working on a set of rules where we kind of cut the story mode out, make some simple gang creation rules and say, here's how you do that. And maybe here are some factions that only exist in that, where you've not got the story. That's where maybe like, you know, your robots might be, or, you know, I don't know, feral ghouls or the scorched or whatever it might be. Maybe that's where those things might live. But this has got long legs. We are thinking, you know, think about the future. You've already seen the Wave 10 stuff that's been announced. And I'm sure that'll be getting rules in factions as well. So yeah, the game is going places. We've got a lot of we've got a wall in the office. So we've got a Nottingham-based office here. We've got seven people in there, I think seven or eight, and a lot of big Fallout fans in the dev team. And Dom, who's one of our New Vegas fanatic, has been plastering ideas on the wall. Everyone's just got so many kind of ideas, and we're going to work through them and get everything done, I think.
Brilliant. Yeah, the smile on my face as you're saying this is it literally hurts. It's been a long day, and you have truly made that day by just in the last couple of minutes of talking about me being able to bring my Fallout fantasies onto the tabletop. I can't wait. And I know it's because I know you've worked on Necromunda, but I can't help but think of those awesome Necromunda scenarios where gangs go after a big scary monster in the sump. And yep. Part of me just immediately goes, Mirelurks. Or the zombies scenario that was from White Dwarf way back when. And all of a sudden, you know, feral ghouls all over the tabletop. Like I'm excited about where this game can go, knowing that you are a part of it and knowing your gaming pedigree. And also having seen the quick start rules and having pushed a few models around and rolled some dice, the nuance to this is, as you say, you can pick it up quickly, but there's depth to keep playing. And if just the three initial factions have given us anything to sink our teeth into, the gang creation has depth, it has choice, it gives you variability, it allows you to create a gang even within those gangs that has its own character. You're not necessarily pushed into a particular build. It really does feel like this game's future is bright.
Couldn't agree more. I think we all want this to be like everyone who's worked on this is a massive fan of it. We're really proud of what we've created. And again, like what I keep wanting to say is, even though like I'm the one that's being pushed out, the whole team has worked incredibly hard. The game would not be what it is without everyone's efforts. I mean, I was in a weird position in that I started working on this as a freelance contractor for Modiphius, and then I was offered part-time work. So I came in house to help like lead the game design team, and having the ability to bring it in house for that final bit of development where you really polish it and develop it and make it really good, having so many different voices, different people who had different ways of playing and different things. I mean, Jess is on our team. She's an amazing, like, she spots the little nuances and the little things. Oh, yeah, technically you could do this, this, and this. Oh, you totally could, couldn't you? And, you know, the sort of thing that normally you don't know until you push the game out to 10,000 people and then someone does it. Justin is just, like, very, very excitable about what the possibilities and the combos and all that kind of thing. Andy, who's the other person who's been working on the game, he has these really nice little insightful ideas. Oh, what if you did this thing? Like, real creative little things. It's a whole team effort. And I think the fact that we've got this great group of people, it's going really good places. We are going to, this game is going to thrive, and I'm so excited. Not to mention, as soon as it's out, we're going to start seeing, I'm sure there'll be fan lists, there'll be fan created scenarios. I cannot wait to see what people come up with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As I said, especially with all that terrain that you guys have that you can either buy directly from you or get the SDLs and print yourself. Oh, I am looking forward to the rules. I'm looking forward to seeing what people put on the tabletop, bringing their Fallout experience onto the tabletop where we can see it and play with it. It's just awesome, right?
Absolutely. So here's my question to you. We're wrapping up, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder, would you like me to send you the link to the Get Your Buy list? You can have a little, give me your first impressions. I want to know what you think.
Oh, yes. I want those right now.
I've just sent you the link. I recommend you go there and have a look.
Excellent. I will be on this right now. I have to edit this tonight. You're a bad man. But I have to say, I did hear an interview where you did ask someone else what they would like to see in this game. And as an avid podcaster and podcast fan, I, of course, was yelling as I was walking the dog what I wanted to hear out into the ether. And so now I thought I would take this opportunity to throw that question back at you. But while you are considering that, my good sir, I'm going to give you mine. I want to see the Atom Cats. I want to see a bunch of 1950s greaser Elvis looking fire painted up there, power armor. I want that. I want Fonzie with plasma rifles. So that's where I'm going. What about you, sir?
Atom Cats are already like they're a thing that we're very aware of. Again, Dom in the office is a massive Atom Cats fan. So that's hopefully we'll get to that point. Some of the ones are tricky because Atom Cats, it's not like it's a big faction. Everyone's kind of a small like named character. But hey, there are ways to bring things like that in. For me, where would I want to go? I'm trying to think. I suppose, I mean, there's a lot of things, right? I mean, the whole of New Vegas is just a place that, you know, a wealthy seam that can be mined, I think. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, Minutemen, I quite like the Minutemen. They're a fun faction to see, especially because there's an interesting challenge there in that they're fairly uniform in their weapons and things. Yeah. So there'd be some fun in doing that. The Institute, that's some fun, right? You got a whole thing there with synths and infiltration and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things. And who knows? I may have said some things they were already working on. Who can say? This is the thing. I'm in a weird position because all my favorite things are the things that I'm already driving towards doing. So, I think people will be happy.
One thing, though, is you can leave Preston Garvey harassing me about going to save some settlements out of this game. Because
it's going to be in it. If you do, there'll be a mini game. Every time you play, you have to go and, like, you know, go deal with this. Here's a to-do list. I know you're out the vault looking for your son, but.
Oh, James, you have got me excited for this game in a giant way. Thank you for all your hard work on it, and I cannot wait to get it on the tabletop. And now that you've sent me some, you know, get you buy list, and I'm sitting on models in my grubby paws as we speak, I'm just going to have to play it. Twist my arm.
I'm amazed that you're still holding the microphone and you haven't already started assembling Brotherhood of Steel miniatures, because look at the get you buy list and thinking, yes, of course, this is who I want.
The secret is, for this podcast, I hold the microphone, so I have to do something with my hands. It keeps
there
me
you
busy.
Go.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to literally, well, I have to edit this, James. We've already been through this.
I apologize for nothing.
Oh, I know what I'm doing this weekend. Anyway, on that note, James, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk shop with you today, sir. Thank you for making the time. I know it's early where you are, but we really do appreciate you coming on to talk about Fallout factions, Nuka World, or whatever other little banner might be underneath it soon. I'm looking forward to playing this game, and this looks awesome. This is what I wanted from a Fallout game all along, and you've delivered in spades, brother. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think it's really, you know, you're not alone in that, and I think this is going to be a really big thing for a lot of people. So thank you for having me.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Come back anytime. And thank you. And also, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. If you have any questions about this, please go to the Modifius website or go to the Fallout Faction Facebook page. I know that they are on there as well. Yep. There's a great community. And James, do you want to add to that?
FalloutFactions.com is the landing page of the game. It's got links to everything. So go check it out.
Go check it out. And thank you very much for listening. As always, if you have feedback for the show or games that you know that we want to talk about, anything you want to talk about gaming wise, please go to CastDice on Facebook, CastDice. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, as our buddy Casey always says, when you are playing the games that we know and love, I hope that your dice roll hot. I hope that your beverages are cold. But more than that, we at CastDice hope that you are having fun. Stay safe out there, guys. Good night. Another day rides in Paraguayan sun. The fuel cracks open, another Heineken. He's all alone, he's in his little room. He's all alone with a Burmese python and a loaded gun. He sleeps by day.
are gone. And that track